This weekend is the summer solstice, as many of you probably know, and may even have celebrated. It's an event that takes me back to my Latvian roots. Now, as many of you may know, Latvia is a small country in Eastern Europe that was overtaken by the Russians during World War II, and then became part of the Soviet Union until the early 1990s, when it gained independence. In Latvia, one of the biggest holidays of the year is the summer solstice. It's an official holiday, so the whole country shuts down for 3 days. Stores and offices close, and a huge exodus occurs from the cities to the countryside. The capital, Riga, is practically dead during this time. People build bonfires, sing songs, eat, drink, and dance all evening long. Because being a very northern country, the sun really does not set at any point during the solstice at this time of the year. It really is a spectacular and spiritual event. As a child, I grew up in a tight-knit Latvian community in Milwaukee, and all of the holidays, especially the solstice, was celebrated with this big extended Latvian community. Having moved many times in my adult life, as many of us have, and no longer having such a tight-knit community, I occasionally become nostalgic for it. I began to feel a sense of loss, and even guilt for not being able to provide this for my two young children. I sense in some ways that I have lost a part of myself. I want to return to the community, or I want the community to return to me, so that I can find this. Today's lesson, I think, from Matthew, as difficult as it sometimes is to read, helps us find ourselves by checking this kind of nostalgia and reminding us that all communities, and even most families, have their limitations, their problems, their betrayals. So Abraham's wife, Sarah, and concubine Hagar do not get along. Abraham abandons Hagar and Ishmael, sending them off with only a bit of food and water. It seems that Abraham has betrayed one of his families. And the gospel reading from Matthew is no better. Jesus claims that he will set men against their fathers and daughters against their mothers. Now, I think it's important to remember that the gospel lesson of the day is actually part of a larger narrative in the Gospel of Matthew. Now, Matthew was writing during a time of real persecution in the first century, where families really were often split by religious affiliation. In this chapter of Matthew, that is chapter 10, Jesus is instructing his disciples. He's teaching his family. And he speaks of sending out the 12 disciples, and giving them the authority to cure diseases and sicknesses, and to cast out unclean spirits. That is, to live out their love towards others. But he also warns that they will experience persecutions, times when brother will betray brother, and fathers their children. Children will betray parents. Now, it seems a very grim prediction. However, I don't think that we have to wait for a future time when these events happen, because we know from our own experience that these betrayals occur fairly often in our everyday lives. As a professor, I'm often privy to the concerns of students, so they share with me their hopes, dreams, and also their struggles. At times, they share their betrayals. A father who beat them, a mother who verbally abused them and made them feel completely insecure, siblings who did not get along, parents who had high expectations, or parents so consumed by addictions that they could not pay attention to them. These students, like all of us, were struggling and are struggling to find themselves. What I want to suggest today is that finding ourselves, also involves losing ourselves, losing a certain past or an attitude or a way of being that we have become used to. In my Latvian community, the betrayals occurred through a type of intolerance of Russians, of Americans, of anyone who was not Latvian. For example, some of my friends were told that if they married an American, their parents would not ever speak to them again. Other people would say, we can never forgive the Russians for what they have done. These sorts of betrayals of love, of loving the other person. We also know that the betrayals occur on a larger or social scale, a world scale. I recently read a historic novel by Valentino Ajukden, which is called What is the What? You may have seen it on shelves in Barnes & Noble. He was one of the lost boys of Sudan, and relates that during the Sudanese conflict, families and friends who had been close for generations began turning on each other, turning against one another, betraying each other. We have, in another way, only to think about some of the more recent conflicts in the world, Bosnia and Serbia, Rwanda, or Darfur, places that have been betrayed by the rest of the world. Betrayals occur on a personal and a social level every day. I think of how often I'm impatient with my young children. I feel it's a small kind of betrayal of love every time, you know, if I raise my voice at them or don't give them the attention that I might want to give. We live with these betrayals, and we often accept them as common sense. It's just the way things are. That's just the way my family is. That's just the way the world is. We learn to live with the betrayals, the disappointments, the abuse. And we develop coping mechanisms. However, I want to suggest that both Hagar and Jesus show us something different. A different attitude. One that is also, in a sense, revealed by Swedenborg, who teaches us that anxiety and grief occur when we are deprived of the things with which we are affected or which we love. So in his commentary on the Hagar story, he suggests that this is what caused Hagar to cry out. She has a longing for love, for security, for the safety of her child. And in being abandoned by Abraham, she despairs. She recognizes that Abraham's abandonment of her and her child is a form of betrayal. It appears that Abraham has renounced his commitment to care for her and for Ishmael. Hagar's anxiety and grief are coming from the right place. Things are not right, and she knows it. The grief and anxiety of being betrayed, or of actually betraying, that Abraham experiences, the grief and anxiety of difficult relationships is born of a sense that it should not be this way, that there is something better possible. Hagar's life was secure when she knew that she and her son would be cared for. Now, if she clings to this idea of being cared for, she may not live. It is exactly this idea of being cared for by somebody else that she has to give up. She has to renounce this thought of security in Abraham in order to go on living. There's an African-American theologian by the name and minister by the name of Dolores Williams who calls what Hagar has to do making a way out of no way. She is emptied of any resources and destitute. She has to open up to what she does not know so well, to what seems to be insecure. That is God. It is God alone, rather than her immediate family or her community, who respond. It is the angel of the Lord that speaks to her. And this is also, in a different way, I think, what Jesus means when he speaks of bringing the sword and not peace. The sword is what allows us to reveal betrayals and to see our own betrayals for what they are, lack of love. To say no to these betrayals amounts to losing our life, or at least to losing our life the way that it is, to losing our life the way that we know it. As we all know, this is a painful process. It is much easier to keep silent. There is a certain security in maintaining the status quo. It is comforting. Excuse me. It is what we know. We like things the way they are. We like the security of family, community, society, even if at times it means enduring something painful. But Jesus suggests today that this is not really peace. Enduring, putting up with, or making do with a limited form of love. Psychologists and therapists encourage us to work through these situations rather than just putting up with them. We have to confront them. And as violent as the sword image seems, I think it conveys something crucial, that we must cut ourselves off in a way from the past. Not get rid of it, but make a decisive break. To cut ourselves off from the betrayals, the painful situations, whether they be in family or in society, ignoring my kids, being impatient, manipulation, taking anger out on a friend, belittling another, betraying another. Jesus asks us to lose the life as we know it, by risking all that we know for something that is less known or unknown, for something which seems to be less secure. It means giving up the security of what we know for what is unknown, heading out alone into the wilderness. Hagar and Jesus suggest that this abandonment of life as we know it is work. Working to make life as a single mother with a young son. Working to not let our various dysfunctions determine us. Working to reject unreal expectations of having to not marry an American, for example. Working to give up false or limited loves. Working to be patient. Working to give up or lose these false ways of loving is a lifetime of work. I don't want to suggest it's a one-time event. It is work. And this is why I think it involves what Jesus calls carrying the cross. Not just picking up the cross, but actually carrying it. Because it is work. And yet it is work that allows us to find ourselves and to find a deeper form of love. Any good therapist or pastor will tell you that finding ourselves comes only when we confront the betrayals and the losses of our lives. Now, for me, that meant losing a part of my Latvian community. So that aspect that sowed hatred towards others had to be lost, had to be given up. For Valentino Acak Den, the lost boy of Sudan, it meant losing a part of his life among the Sudanese. He speaks about many of his friends joining the army to fight. And he talks about how the expectation was that if you were a young man, you would go into the army and fight, which is how most of his friends ended up losing their lives. He had to let go of that expectation. He let go of the expectation of fighting and of being in the army, of killing others. He let go of the expectation of being in a close Sudanese community in the refugee camp and came to America. He lost life as he knew it. He came here and struggled for many years. It was not easy. It was a culture shock. And he reoriented his life. And he's now starting a foundation to build schools in Sudan. It was work. It wasn't easy, and it still isn't easy. Losing ourselves to these attitudes of betrayal that so pervade many of our lives and our world can create the possibility of loving, of receiving divine love, and of truly loving the neighbor, of being attentive to and of waiting for divine love to permeate and impact our lives. This is what I think the message of today tells us. That if we are ready to work at losing life as we know it, there will be a finding of ourselves. Not an easy one, but a finding and a deepening of our lives. Amen.